the reason that walking around the block or making your bed is important. It's not going to get you in shape. What it will do is it sends a really important message to your brain.
Welcome to The One You Feed. Throughout time, great thinkers have recognized the importance of the thoughts we have. Quotes like garbage in, garbage out, or you are what you think ring true. And yet, for many of us, our thoughts don't strengthen or empower us. We tend toward negativity, self-pity, jealousy, or fear. We see what we don't have instead of what we do. We think things that hold us back and dampen our spirit. But it's not just about thinking. Our actions matter. It takes conscious, consistent, and creative effort to make a life worth living. This podcast is about how other people keep themselves moving in the right direction, how they feed their good wolf.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Thanks for joining us. Our guest on this episode is Tim Urban. Tim has become one of the internet's most popular writers. With wry stick figure illustrations and occasionally epic prose on everything from procrastination to artificial intelligence, Urban's blog, Wait But Why, has garnered millions of unique page views, thousands of patrons, and many famous fans. His recent TED Talk has been watched almost 15 million times. Tim's articles have been regularly republished on sites like Quartz, The Washington Post, The Atlantic, Time, Business Insider, and Gizmodo. Tim was recently invited by Elon Musk to host SpaceX's launch webcast and was granted early access to information about SpaceX's interplanetary transport system.
If you're getting value out of this show, please go to oneyoufeed.net/support and make a donation. This will ensure that all 185 episodes that are in the archive will remain free and that the show is here for other people who need it. Some other ways that you can support us is if you're interested in the book that we're discussing on today's episode, go to oneyoufeed.net and find the episode that we're talking about. There will be links to all of the author's books, and if you buy them through there, it's the same price to you, but we get a small amount. Also, you can go to oneyoufeed.net/book, and I have a reading list there. oneyoufeed.net/shop, and you can buy t-shirts, mugs, and other things. And finally, oneyoufeed.net/Facebook, which is where our Facebook group is, and you can interact with other listeners of the show and get support in feeding your good wolf. Thanks again for listening.
And here's the interview with Tim Urban.
Hi, Tim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I am really happy to have you on. Your blog, Wait But Why, is one of my favorites, and I had a great time preparing for this interview. So I'm looking forward to getting into and exploring all that. But let's start like we always do with the parable. There's a grandfather who's talking with his grandson. He says, in life, there are two wolves inside of us that are always at battle. One is a good wolf, which represents things like kindness and bravery and love. And the other's a bad wolf, which represents things like greed and hatred and fear. And the grandson stops and he thinks about it for a second and he looks up at his grandfather and he says, well, grandfather, which one wins? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. So I'd like to start off by asking you what that parable means to you in your life and in the work that you do.
I like that. That's a much more poetic way of talking about what I write about a lot, which is that there's like truly an internal battle going on inside every person. It goes on in us in our own way. The battle is always kind of the same two characters. One is this higher consciousness, this kind of higher center of rationality and logic and reasonability and high-minded emotions that no other animal can experience or no other animal has. Then there's the fact that that higher center of consciousness is stuck inside of a primitive biological animal who cares about animal survival only. and humans, that animal survival instinct is usually tied into, you know, kind of our tribal past. And so the animal wants to fit in a powerful tribe, along with other things like wants to eat as many calories as possible and wants to conserve energy as much as possible. So you kind of have this kind of Einstein style higher consciousness kind of dealing with the animal all the time. And that, again, that, so that comes out in different ways for all of us. Some of us, it makes us procrastinate. And for some of us, it makes us very socially anxious. Some of us, it makes us envious or greedy, or we succumb to groupthink and we lose our ability to think independently, even though the rational consciousness in us is so great at thinking independently. But it gets overpowered by this animal that just wants to say the right thing and think the right thing. So I think that most of the human struggles that we go through individually and probably that we go through as a species kind of come down to this battle between these wolves. And anytime I'm writing about human psychology or something that's hard for people or whatever, when I'm thinking about this issue, I almost inevitably end up back at these two wolves. And here we are again. This is just another version of the same battle.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a core theme that runs through all of your work, is that higher self versus the animal self. And I love the way that you talk about the rational mind being trapped inside the body with an animal, and that these two things have to coexist. And I love that idea that if we were one or the other, it would be so much simpler. But we're not. We're both. And that's what makes things so challenging.
If we were just an animal, we'd be so happy. We'd be, you know, just eating an apple and just sitting around and looking at the trees, and everything would be great. If we were just either one of these characters on its own, we'd be happy. It would be simple. But it's almost as if, you know, evolution decided to create this rational center of consciousness. And its plan, obviously, you know, logically, would be to upload something like that to the cloud or to a kind of synthetic body, because it goes along with something like that. That's what would make sense for it. But it hasn't done that part yet. It hasn't figured out the uploading part yet. It just, as a temporary hack, it's using kind of like a biological primate body as a vessel for it. And while we're in this transition period, we unfortunately have been born into the transition period, and we are sitting here now dealing with the fact that we are both of these things at the same time.
This leads us to one of the things that you're probably best known for, which is your post and your subsequent TED talk on procrastination. And the way that you describe this, the way you describe how procrastination works, is so great. And it gets exactly to this. So could you kind of give the listeners a brief walkthrough of that idea? There's lots of parts to it, but let's start with the beginning, which is really about having these two things in our head.
Yeah. So one form that these two wolves take is the form of rational decision maker in your head, and what I call the instant gratification monkey in your head as well. And to me, we're all actually acting. Sometimes the two wolves is about thinking or about feeling. And in this case, I feel like this is about when it's about acting. And it's as if there's like a wheel in your head that drives your actions at any given moment. And the rational decision maker is behind the wheel where he should be and making decisions rationally. Sometimes it's a good time to have fun. He drives the wheel so that you'll have fun then. Sometimes it makes sense to sleep or do something productive, get to work. It makes much more sense to get to work. And that's great. But then this instant gratification monkey's in there, who's also very powerful and who has different ideas of what to do. What the instant gratification monkey wants to do is at all times, no matter what's going on, wants to do something easy or fun, period. He never thinks it makes sense to work. And he wants to maximize, you know, the ease and pleasure of the current moment at all times. So when you're struggling with procrastination, when you're one part of you is saying, oh, it's a really good time to work, I should definitely sit around and work right now. And then some other part of you just opens the internet and opens up a different screen than you were planning to, and starts doing something that's not productive, and it's kind of odd. It's kind of, as I said, another version of, you know, when you're like, oh, I shouldn't have another cookie, but I really just want another cookie, or I shouldn't. It's the acting version. It's the work version of that. So what's happening is that the rational decision maker says, let's do some work, and then the monkey just like kind of jumps in and grabs the wheel. and you find yourself like physically, your part of your brain is saying, don't do that, don't do this, don't open that window, don't open this site or whatever it is, your hand does it anyway. It's kind of strange. We're kind of crazy people, but that's because we have two characters in our head, not one.
The drawings of this are great. So folks, if you're not familiar with it, definitely go to waitbutwhy.com and look at this. I'm a big fan of the drawing of the monkey myself. I think a lot of people are because you've now got a stuffed animal for it. But so we've got this situation where, as you said, we're trying to steer the course of our life, and this instant gratification monkey grabs the wheel and decides what's happening. And it's very difficult for us to get control back from the instant gratification monkey. But then you go on to talk about there is one thing that the monkey is terrified of. What's that?
Yeah. So I know from my own experience, my monkey is very powerful, much more powerful than my rational decision maker. When they're in an argument, the monkey always wins. And so why am I not lying on the street somewhere, just nothing? I realize that it's all about, for me, if there's some kind of other pressure, if there's some kind of external deadline or some kind of serious consequence. Then another character who's usually dormant kind of rages into the scene, and that's the panic monster. And the panic monster only wakes up when there's some kind of like very panicky moment when, oh God, this is due tomorrow. I you know, or you say, you know, oh my, I'm going to be on stage. This is going to be, I'm going to embarrass myself. I can't believe I haven't worked on, you know, something where you totally freak out. Then the monkey's actually scared only of the panic monster. The monkey then runs away, and for just, you know, while that panic is happening, at least the rational decision maker can like grab the wheel and frantically try to get things done, you know, cursing you and cursing himself now because of how little time he's got. Then it's done, and I get things done the very last second. Usually don't miss a deadline. I don't miss a scary deadline. I might miss a deadline that I've set for myself, but right. A really, you know, panicky deadline, I don't miss that. And then the second that's done, I move on to the next project and say, great, let's get going. And the monkey's back because the panic monster went to sleep. Monkey kind of, drop kicks the rational decision maker in the face and just takes the wheel back. And that's and I'm back in that land. So this is a pattern that is not a one or two time thing. This has been going on since I was like seven, this pattern. And it's very consistent. And so, if you're me, and I think a lot of other people are probably like this, you have kind of two options. You can say, okay, well, this is my situation, so I need panic. I need the panic monster to help me all the time. So you build external deadlines somehow. You figure out how to do that. Always have that in your life. Or you try to actually undergo an internal shift. And it's a little like who you feed, maybe. Everyone's got these two characters. The difference between people who can manage their own work and don't procrastinate, the only difference is that the rational decision maker in their head is the alpha character and can just say, no, monkey, not now. And the monkey listens. And people who have a procrastination problem, the alpha character in the end is the monkey. The monkey's a brat who does not, he'll just, you know, the rational decision maker says, no, not now. And the monkey says, shut up, and pushes him out of the way and takes the wheel. And so you can try to really work on your psychology to try to change that. And I think that's probably very hard. It's been very hard for me, but I think it probably can be done. People treat procrastination lightly, but it's like anything else. It's like overeating. It's like if someone gets into gambling or something else that they don't want to be doing and they're doing too much of it. You know, it can be a form of addiction in a way. You're kind of you're stuck in a pattern that can be, you know, very hard to get out of. I go one notch further in the post and the talk and say that, you know, maybe 20% of people in studies seem to be chronic procrastinators. And I think those are the people that have the same exact kind of very kind of a deadline based problem. And they really just can't. They're children about their work. But actually, when I thought about this a lot, and I read a bunch of emails that I got from readers after writing this post about their lives, it hit me that the monkey does the most serious damage, not when you're cramming for some deadline and, oh man, I'm going to pull an all-nighter. Oh, now this work isn't going to be as good. That's bad, but that's not serious, long-term, like deep, you know, regretful damage. And that kind of damage the monkey does in situations when there are no deadlines, you know, much more daunting things like changing your career or breaking up with someone or working on a relationship that, you know, you should be working on or seeing your family more, or working on your health and getting, you know, exercising, these big, really critically important things, the kind of things you think about in your deathbed that I think way more than 20% of people procrastinate on. Because, you know, when there are no deadlines, you don't really see the procrastination happening. And you don't appear to others to be a procrastinator. But I think there's a lot of people when they, you know, really think about their lives, you know, the things that they're, you know, regretful about or stressed out about or depressed about or whatever, often amount to the fact that they too are in the hands of the monkey when deadlines aren't part of a situation. So it's like they might not be scared of the panic monster right when he arrives in a full panic, but it can be that they actually dread his arrival so much that they do the work right away. So they don't seem to be, but they're still driven in the end by the panic monster. The panic monster for them is still the thing that makes them do work, even if they don't realize it. And when he's not part of the equation, suddenly that work doesn't happen, just like it doesn't happen for the chronic procrastinator. So
right.
That's kind of the extent of the talk in the post.
And here's the rest of the interview with Tim Urban.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation, so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep Tight Stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just talked about a couple of ways to deal with this. One is to sort of create your own panic monster, right? Put all these external deadlines in place. You talked about changing your psychology, and I'll come back to that one in just a second, but you also have some fairly practical ideas too. And one of the things I say on this show a lot is that I think that being overwhelmed and things being ambiguous are a couple big causes of procrastination. And you talk about how the fact that for a lot of us, when we try and come up with a plan for what we're going to do, we end up making a long list of, you call them, icky, daunting tasks that the monkey can very easily be like, all right, you know what? No way. This is easy. I can procrastinate this. So talk to me a little bit about what you mean by that and how doing better planning helps you to procrastinate less.
Part of the problem for procrastinators is how they kind of view big projects, you know, how they frame them in their heads. And so they see, they have to do a big project, whether it's for work or whether it's, again, something in their life they want to get in shape or whatever it is. And they see it as like this building they have to build. And they just look at the building and they say, okay, well, I'll do that some other time. Like, I'm not doing that now. I don't even know how to build a building. But I try to say in the post is that, you know, it's a building is just a bunch of bricks. If you look at any great achievement, a great symphony, a great book somebody wrote, whatever it is, it's actually, you know, one book is just a bunch of individual pages somebody wrote. And if you think about it is, I don't have to write a book. I have to write a page 280 times. And I have a year to do it. So really, I only have to write today. I only have to write a page. And that's it. And I kind of say in the post that I think that, you know, a glorious kind of remarkable achievement is really just a bunch of really unglorious, unremarkable, small achievements from what it looks like from far away. Like when you take a big step back, you're like, whoa, look at this whole achievement. But actually, you zoom up close, it's a bunch of these little bricks that were just, you know, that person that wrote that symphony. Well, on a Wednesday, they really just wrote a few bars of that symphony and maybe did a little bit of orchestrating. And that's not that impressive on a Wednesday. But it's when you take, you know, the 423 days they worked on it combined, and you look at that all together, you say, oh my God, well, I could never do that daunting, amazing achievement. So I think a lot of this is framing and just breaking things down into smaller tasks and getting really competitive with yourself as if you're being like, because you are dealing with a child. The monkey is kind of a child inside of you and saying, look, we just have to do this one brick today. That's it. And then we can have fun. Like, you just have to do this one thing. Forget the rest of the thing. That's not our problem. We don't do you have to kind of be an insane person talking to a child in your head. But if you can kind of do that, I find that that can really help. If I just wake up and I say, I have this only this one thing to do. Now, what a procrastinator does, it often goes along with the same kind of personality that underestimates how much time everything takes. So they'll assign themselves way too much in a day. They'll make the bricks too big. Unrealistically big. And then the monkey, you know, you'll feel daunted, which empowers the monkey. And then you end up in some kind of like self-fulfilling prophecy where you don't really think you're going to get it done. And then you don't get it done. And then you're self-loathing. And then you feel less likely to get it done the next day. And now you feel like you have to get more done the next day because you didn't. And you can get into this bad spiral. So I think it's also really important to just, even just starting off really small, it's such a self-esteem battle. You talk about which wolf you're feeding. I kind of think that it's when you succeed at overpowering the monkey, even just on a small little thing. You go to the gym and you've been telling yourself you're going to do that, but you haven't been, and then you do it that day. You come back, I think you find the rest of that day, the rational decision maker has a little bit more mojo and the monkey's a little bit meeker than he normally is. And if you can do it the next day, internally, you start to predict that the rational decision maker is going to win. You say, well, he won 2 days in a row. I guess if I'm a betting person, I would bet on them again tomorrow. And it's when you believe that the rational decision maker is going to win, it's usually when he does win. It's when he's failed 7 days in a row and you say, well, let's be honest, you know, deep down you say, oh, yeah, of course I'm going to do it today. But somewhere deep inside of you, you think, well, but I probably won't because that's not what's been happening. The monkey gets that information and feels that. And that's all the power in the world for the monkey. So, you know, and the worst thing you can do is this, what you mentioned is icky, daunting task. Say, I'm going to learn this new skill just in general. And it's, you don't even know where to start. You don't even know where do I read books? Do I go on YouTube? You know, and so you just look at that and you say, well, okay, I'm not doing that today because you haven't broken it down into smaller tasks. You just have this one big building in front of you. You don't even know how to build it. And you feel like you're not going to do it. And so the monkey, you're no match for the monkey. The monkey's laughing at the even notion that you're going to get that thing done. And so I think that can definitely help.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I work with people on this sort of stuff, and everything you said is 100% true in my experience. It's why starting so small is so important, because you can win a very small battle. Like, okay, you know what? You haven't been exercising in a year. Great. Today, your goal is to walk around the block. And people are like, that's stupid. I'll never get in shape walking around the block. And I'm like, no, you won't. But that one walking around the block, like you said, it builds your confidence a little bit. You start keeping promises to yourself, and then that gives you more strength. You're able to build from that, and then that changes what you refer to as the storyline, right? And that storyline is that idea, like, we don't really take ourselves seriously when we say we're going to do something because we failed so many times before.
Your storyline is logical. It just looks at the past, it looks at your patterns, and it guesses the story here is this, that I don't actually get anything done when I say I'm going to. And if that becomes your storyline, that's what will end up playing out. So it's this kind of catch-22 where you need to break that cycle. You know, that's the thing. And someone, I forget who it was, said that the first thing they do every morning is they make the bed. Not because they really care about having a made bed, but because it's a first moment to feel like an adult and to do something that you didn't have to do and that you did because it's the thing you said you were going to do. And I find kind of my version of that is if I just get up, I'm a writer and I work from home a lot. And so if I just get up and pull the laptop onto the bed and start sticking around and start maybe, slowly working or whatever, I might be in there till 1 p.m. and then just curse myself and get out of bed and shower and like get going. And if I just get up and just get straight in the showers, first thing, just get up and not even just mindlessly walk, suddenly it's like I just before you know it, I'm kind of like, okay, wow, it's 9:41 and I'm sitting here working. This is great. And like, just that just like kicks me into, I'm like, I feel like an adult. And then it kind of almost doesn't make sense to procrastinate. It's like if you go off sugar for a while, you stop wanting it, you stop craving it and you stop being addicted to it so much. So, but on the days when it's 1:50, when I'm first sitting at the computer to start work, I'm so self-loathing and just so like mad at myself that I often will basically get nothing done, even though now I still have a bunch of hours. I'll work very slowly. My self-esteem is in a terrible place. So the reason that walking around the block or making your bed or getting up and getting in the shower right away is important. It's like you said, it's not going to get you in shape to walk around the block, but what it will do is it sends a really important message to your brain, which is that the monkey didn't want to do that. And the rational decision maker did, and the rational decision maker won because the rational decision maker is in charge. And you come back from that walk and suddenly kind of the power dynamic might feel a little different than it just did, a half hour ago. So starting a day with a few little wins can go a long way. It can actually really kind of start a chain effect.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love that concept of bricks that you talked about and that idea that a book is just a series of small bricks put together. And one of the things you said that really hit me about that, you said that if you've got an author and somebody who wants to be an author, right, the difference in their day-to-day life isn't that big. 95% of their days are exactly the same. It's just that the author put that one brick in today and the non-author didn't. And that really struck me. It's this idea of it's not about changing everything immediately overnight. And it goes back to what we were just talking about. It's this theme of just these little steps taken, keep going in the right direction. And at the end of that, things can look very different. But trying to go from A to Z almost inevitably fails.
Right. And when you're an author that actually writes books, you know this little secret. But when you're not, when you always wanted to write your book and you've talked about it forever, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write it before work every day. I'm going to write a little. I'm going to write it. Whatever it is, you have this myth in your head that the successful author just simply has some power that you don't have. They say, I don't know how they could ever do that. They wrote an entire book. I could never actually do that because they see it as a full book. They're looking at a big building when really it's 285 bricks. Each brick is one page of writing, or maybe it's 700 bricks and each brick is just a paragraph. And so if you think about a brick as a paragraph, say, you know, there's two people and the first person wants to write that book. It just on that Monday doesn't do anything and Tuesday doesn't do anything and just, you know, just doesn't quite manage to start like most of us. And then the second person on that Monday, they write two paragraphs before work. On Tuesday, as they're lying in bed at night, they write another paragraph. On Wednesday, they do nothing. On Thursday, they have a little afternoon writing session and they write four paragraphs. On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they do nothing. Then on Monday, after work, they write four more paragraphs. You know, on Tuesday, they write one. So if you look at the difference between the two people's days, they're almost always the same. Some days they're identical. And the other days, we're talking about like a 30-minute difference. Like 95%+ of the time, they're the same exact person. But then a year later, person A has got nothing, like they always have. And person B has a finished manuscript that they can send in, and maybe it's published a year later, changes their entire life. And that's the difference. And it's, and the difference is not 24/7. They're just different people. The difference is, you know, between 6:30 and 7 in the morning, you know, a few days a week, they're doing something different. Maybe the other person's awake and they're just doing a crossword puzzle in that time, whatever it is. I mean, this is so similar, and yet the differences are everything. So that's when I look at someone, you say, oh, this person was prolific. How did this person do it? Look, this person wrote, you know, 10 great novels in their life. And I'm thinking, like, that person, as far as you know, was like, you know, basically doing nothing most of the time and just had a habit, a good habit that they developed of they wrote for a couple hours in the morning, 4 days a week. I mean, something can be as simple as that. That can turn into a prolific writer in history. I mean, and so, so when you think of it that way, I think it just, it's very inspiring to a procrastinator to think, you know, I can do this. You remind yourself that like no one has magic powers. It's a different version of how we think that people have expertise that we could never ever have. You know, they just, oh, I could never, you know, again, I keep using the book example. I could never write that book, or I could never do a talk on this subject, or I could never get this job and learn to do that because I didn't get the degree. I don't have this. I just don't. I literally lack this forever, lack this knowledge that this kind of person has. And I just could. And that's just not true also. Like everyone is kind of full of shit. Everyone is learning on the job. Everyone is, you know, feels like a fraud a little bit and feels like, you know, they don't belong in the company they're in. And when you kind of realize that as well, it's just you kind of, it's this myth of everything is more daunting and more impossible seeming and harder than it actually is. And I think that that's the brick kind of concept can really help, I think, you know, get you out of that kind of myth.
Absolutely. So the last part about procrastination I want to hit, because when I read it, I just was like, I'd never been able to find the words for it, but it's the dark playground. So explain to me what the dark playground is.
Everyone knows what the dark playground is, and some people know it way, way better than others. And what it is, you know, it's that moment when your rational decision maker has decided to work. You know, it's a perfect time to get some work done. It's the early afternoon. If you get four more hours of work done today, you'll feel great tonight. You'll have a great weekend. And if you don't, you're gonna have to work over the weekend, and you're gonna feel stressed, and it's gonna kind of like, you're going to be really upset with yourself and you won't have as much fun tonight. It's and there's not anything else really good to be even doing in the next 4 hours. It just makes every sense in the world to just put your head down and get 4 hours of work done. And yet there you are not working. Okay. And hours pass, 1 hour, 2 hours. And you know, you're not desperate to get it done. You're just doing something else. And where you are in that moment is the dark playground. And it's kind of a place where leisure activities and fun things happen at times when they're not supposed to be happening. And the reason it's a dark playground and not a fun playground is that, you know, I say that the air is filled with guilt and dread and anxiety and self-loathing and all these very familiar procrastination, you know, feelings. And so, you know, the fun isn't actually fun. It's you're miserable when you're there. And, you know, even if part of you is like laughing at a meme you're looking at, you know, a bigger part of you underneath this just has this head in its hand saying, why am I doing this right now? And it's a very, very specific kind of self-loathing. It's a not a good feeling. And it illuminates the true kind of irrationality of procrastination, and that you'd be happier right now if you were working. You'd actually feel like, okay, good, I'm getting this done. Like, you know, it's hard. It's not fun to work, but you're not having fun either way. And now you're ruining like real fun later. And I always say that if you can just, you know, get the work done, which I kind of call like the dark woods, if you can kind of just go through those dark woods instead of sitting around the dark playground, unlike the dark playground, which has no good end in sight, it's just you continue to be there, or you then have to, you know, scramble to work later and you ruin your leisure time. If you just power through those dark woods and get that 4 hours of work done, there's such a happy playground on the other side. And it's the best feeling, which is well-earned leisure time. It's when you're now, you know, you're at a movie that night, or you're out with friends that night, or the next day you wake up and you go to brunch and you have nothing to do that weekend because you just got your stuff done the day before, whatever the circumstance is. It's the happy playground. It feels great. It's just, you can be present. Your mind is present there. You don't think, ah, I should be doing something. Ah, I should. Why didn't I? There's just, you know, it's so incredibly logical. That's where the rational decision maker, it's not that he wants to work all the time. He loves leisure time when it makes sense. So he's pulling his hair out saying, why did we do it this way? And when you're in the dark playground, he's just sitting there, you know, thinking, I can't, why are we here? What, this is such valuable time right now that we're, and the monkey, of course, is just dancing around, running around, playing, because he's thinking, I want to maximize this minute's fun. I want this minute to be more fun than as much fun as it could be. And right now, I guess my options are, I'm going to do something fun, you know, on the internet, or I'm going to go, you know, whatever. So that's kind of the craziest place that the procrastinator is the dark playground. And, you know, I'm there all the time, and I know a lot of other people are too.
Absolutely. I think a lot of social media time is in the dark playground. And I've spent a lot of dark playground time playing solitaire. It's amazing that game can, it's like devil's work.
It's like in the dark playground, there's a bunch of rides, and solitaire is like the premier ride. There's nothing more self-loathing than when you should be working, you know it, and you're behind, and you're late for something, and you're playing, of all things, solitaire.
I've
added up 400 hours of solitaire in my life. I mean, it's just, it is the most self-loathing activity a human can possibly do.
I agree 100%. I'm glad someone else shares that feeling with me.
Then you win solitaire. You know, it's like you win, and you're just looking with no joy at the screen.
None.
Like the cards fall.
And you click and you deal again.
Yep. Yeah. It is a joyless. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's a terrible thing. All right. Well, Tim, we're going to wrap up part one of this. So thank you for coming on, and listeners, we'll be back with part two.
If what you just heard was helpful to you, please consider making a donation to the One You Feed podcast. Head over to oneyoufeed.net/support.